Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Once in a while, the studio would say, oh, we have a young gal here under contract. Would you take her? Or would you do this? Or would you do that? And I'd say, sure. But that's your job.
In the 1950s, Tab Hunter made teenage girls across the country swoon. Blonde and gorgeous, he was seen around town with Natalie Wood and Debbie Reynolds. Behind the scenes, he was with men, including Psycho star Tony Perkins. In the new documentary, Tab Hunter Confidential, the star looks at the business then and now. He and the film's director, Jeffrey Schwartz, join us. But first on the News Banter, the upfronts are wrapping up. The big broadcast networks are still in the game, but it is getting tougher. Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Bum, 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 bum. I am joined by my partner in banter, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Kim.
So the upfronts, Mike, you know, we talk about those in May when the advertisers are gathered in New York at major venues and the big broadcast networks show their new fall programming in the hope that these advertisers will like what they see and spend billions of dollars to buy commercial time. Since May, they have been selling, the broadcast networks have been selling their wares to advertisers. And of course, this game has gotten tougher as the internet becomes a bigger thing and there's more original programming in other places and things are being streamed. But still, billions of dollars will change hands.
Yes, yes. I mean, advertisers are moving more money to digital. And, you know, this is a big difference from the even a decade ago when most of these upfront sales were done by Memorial Day weekend. There was a frenzy. But these days, there just isn't a frenzy. Everyone's taking their time. They're waiting to see who blinks first because the increases, the ad rate increases that the networks used to count on year after year just aren't happening anymore. Or if they are, they're small 2%, 3% changes, which is not a big deal. And not what the networks once upon a time were expecting and used to. So network by network, soft year.
Yeah, Fox, of course, taking the biggest hit because, of course, they did have Empire. Speaking of, that is in fact a big hit.
Yeah.
But other than that, American Idol was in its decline and they just had the pretty bare cupboard in terms of stuff that
right.
was working.
Fox is sort of coming back down to earth because they had so many years of just super inflated numbers because of American Idol and their rates hadn't adjusted yet to reflect the fact that Idol's just not a mega hit anymore. So a show like Empire helps tremendously, but with Idol out of the game, it's still coming back down to earth. So they're actually seeing some rollbacks in terms of the kinds of rates that they offer advertisers, where other networks are still managing slight increases, but not great increases. CBS, for example, is small gains here and there, but their volume is down. And you know, a lot of these networks now are holding back for what is called the scatter marketplace.
Right.
Which is when you actually wait until mid-season and buy on the spot. And the hope
right.
is maybe rates will be higher and demand will be higher.
Right. If you suddenly have Empire, you can say, actually, we need this much per 30 seconds
exactly.
on our air.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Another network that's doing okay this year is ABC, which actually has benefited greatly from the Shonda Rhimes hits on Thursday night.
Absolutely.
And they also had some, you know, strong comedies coming into this fall, including shows like Fresh Off the Boat and Black-ish. So ABC had a decent story to tell this year, and their ad team is benefiting from that.
Yeah, I think it's a gradual shift, but so far the networks are still very much in business. NBC, however, and I really truly hate to talk about Donald Trump again. It wounds me, but we just managed to update.
He loves you talking about Donald Trump, so
yeah,
he'll appreciate
partly
this.
Partly why I hate it. You know, just at the beginning of the past week, the NBC severed ties with him. I must say, for NBC, which tends to be rather slow off the mark sometimes with things like whether they admit that they're replacing Jay Leno or whether they dropped Bill Cosby, this one they moved pretty quick.
Yeah, and this was a complicated one because it's not just that they licensed Miss USA from Trump. They are 50-50 owners of this pageant with Trump. He's a business partner. So to sort of drop ties without even knowing what that means, are they selling back their stake in the pageants? What are they doing there? They don't even know for sure yet. I think they're trying to figure that out, but they wanted to get in front of this controversy.
And we talked before about how Univision had dropped him first. That was the first to get rid of Donald Trump, and he is now suing them for $500 million. I don't know how that's going to go for him. I'm sure he'll spend a lot on legal fees if he carries on with it. He's been dropped by, you know, in a deal with Carlos Slim, the Mexican billionaire who was in a, you know, obviously not going to be in business with him after he said that Mexican immigrants are rapists, that's, and so on. He's been dropped by Macy's. You know, he's not going to be on Celebrity Apprentice anymore. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he's really going to be president. I guess he's getting a lot of attention now, and maybe he just really, really enjoys that. But long term, I'm not sure where this is taking him.
Yeah, and I don't know if he ever thought so, but he's definitely got now a campaign platform to rally around. And for his base, they're loving every second of this.
Both of them, yes. In TV land, meanwhile, you know, the Confederate flag is also in disgrace right now in the wake of the tragedy in Charleston. The flags are being dropped by Walmart and other people who sell those flags. And TV land has just pulled Dukes of Hazzard because on that car, and I will admit I have never seen the Dukes of Hazzard, but apparently there is this, you've seen it, Mike, there's a car with a flag on it.
Yeah, it's the General Lee, which was the iconic car from the Dukes of Hazzard. And yeah, there's a Confederate flag painted on top of the car. So it's not something you can just sort of edit out of episodes. It's, you know, one of the characters on the show. So TV land has decided, at least for now, to, and it's not even that they played Dukes of Hazzard all that often, but it still was in rotation. So much like a few months ago when they also yanked the Cosby Show off the air because Bill Cosby was in the center of controversy, they've decided also to pull Dukes of Hazzard off.
Warner Brothers has also stopped licensing stuff from the Dukes of Hazzard merchandise. So that's done. I mean, I think we can agree in all of these cases, there is a cost-benefit analysis. The networks aren't going to talk about it. Warner Brothers and NBC are not going to say, we did the math. But I think it's fair, wouldn't you say, Mike, to assume that they're not going to, I mean, maybe NBC is going to have a problem with Donald Trump because it is a co-venture with him. But basically, in terms of the properties themselves, not that valuable?
Not that valuable. I mean, Miss USA last year did about 5.5 million viewers, which is not a big hit. And honestly, this brings up a larger topic of the future of beauty pageants on television anyway. Miss America has had trouble in recent years even getting a platform. It's now back on ABC, but there are several years where Miss America was searching for a home. So pageants maybe are a relic of a different time as well.
Yeah, you think so?
It's a much so there's another topic underlying here, in that NBC was probably ready also to cut ties because pageants are old skewing. They don't get a lot of viewers. Maybe just was an unnecessary expenditure.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Kim.
That's Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. A quick postscript. After we recorded the banter, it was announced that the Reels channel, which picked up a controversial Kennedy miniseries a while back, is going to air the Miss USA pageant. And in another major development, the Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a lower court was mistaken in handing a victory to two interns who successfully sued Fox because they had not been paid when they worked on Black Swan. More on that to come, no doubt.
He's a runaway. He's a runaway.
He's the young fellow you've been waiting for, ladies and gentlemen. Tab Hunter!
6 feet of rugged manhood to stir the heart of every woman.
Oh, my goodness, I'm flabbergasted!
Tab Hunter!
How do you shave, Tab?
With a Gillette Super Speed, of course.
Tab Hunter!
You tell me where I could find Tab Hunter.
Well, you do pretty good.
Gee, thanks.
What do you like about Tab Hunter?
Well... quite a few things.
Those are just a few of the adoring fans who made Tab Hunter a superstar of the 1950s. Blonde and stunningly handsome, Hunter's nickname was the Psy Guy. One of the last actors who was under contract to a studio, he was a top star for Warner Brothers until 1959. He was also a singer whose single, Young Love, was number one on the Billboard Hot 100 chart for 6 weeks in 1957. Hunter also played Joe Hardy in the 1958 movie Damn Yankees, with Gwen Verdon starring as Lola.
You're making things very complicated.
Then be good boy.
I'm trying to.
And do like Lola tells you to do. Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets. And little man, little Lola wants you.
In real life, Hunter was not tempted by the likes of Lola. The star, who turns 84 this month, was gay and in the closet. In 2005, Hunter told his life story in the book Tab Hunter Confidential. Director Jeffrey Schwartz adapted the memoir into a documentary of the same name. Hunter says as he was coming of age in Hollywood, no one, even in the industry, talked about the fact that he was gay.
See, first of all, the word wasn't around. And if anybody had mentioned the word to me, I'd have just given them this look as if, say, what the heck are you talking about? This is none of your business. I lived a very private life, and I still do to this day. The only reason I wrote the book or did the documentaries, well, I did the book because I heard someone else was going to be doing a book on me. And I thought, look, get it from the horse's mouth and not from some horse's ass after I'm dead and gone.
Right.
Because people love to put a slant on your life and, you know, put a spin on it. And that's not it. I've got nothing to hide. This was the trip. And, you know, it's been a very gratifying, wonderful, wonderful life for me.
So at one point you were... Early on, I think, you were actually arrested at a party, which was, you know, because at that time, being at a party with other gay men who were called homosexuals then, I guess, that was illegal.
I didn't even know that that was that kind of a party. A friend of mine, Terry Marceller, said, I'd just been out of the Coast Guard. I was like 14 and a half, 15 years old. A friend of mine said, oh, I'm going to a party. Let's go. So I said, fine. You know, I was always hungry, free food. I walked in. I saw some guys dancing together, some women dancing together. I thought, oh, gosh. So I went to the refrigerator, and bingo, the cops came in and arrested us all. And that's just how it went. But, of course, years later, they put a spin on it, typical of publicity, you know, in the press.
Right.
Yeah, these were just regular folks. I mean, this was at a time where the LAPD had essentially declared war on perverts, essentially. I mean, and it was illegal to be gay at that
right.
time.
Perverts. Don't you love it?
This was considered lewd, lascivious, vagrancy.
Right.
And
right.
this was not uncommon. So Tab was just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
He wasn't the Tab Hunter.
He wasn't the Tab Hunter
He probably
hunter
wasn't even Tab Hunter
he
at all.
He was Art Galeen. But this was a pretty common practice. And there was really no such thing as being openly gay at that time.
Right.
You could be openly gay among other gay people.
Right.
If you were working in Hollywood or if you were working as a hairdresser or in the costume department, you could be openly gay. There were certainly no openly gay movie stars
right.
at that time.
And there still aren't to this day leading men or women that are, you know, gay, that are, you know, that are accepted in that role.
There's really not a movie star that I can think of who's out. And I'm sure there are gay movie stars that we all know about, but they're not out.
Exactly.
It's kind of, I mean, it must be sort of a mixed thing from your standpoint, Tab, having seen all of this. Like you can, I don't know if you imagined a world where gay marriage would be legal. But at the same time, we still have this thing where it just people's fantasy because, I don't know, the hetero world dominates. What is that about?
The important thing is a person be true to themselves. That's what it's all about. You know, call it this, call it that, label it this, get on a bandwagon for that, do whatever you want. All I'm saying is be truthful to yourself. That's the most important thing.
Well, it's a business, and it's still a business, and not really that much has changed in my point of view, and I've talked to Tab about this. I mean, Hollywood is selling fantasy.
Right.
And they're still selling fantasy. And there is an idea going around, I don't know if it's true or not, but that certain percentage of the audience will not accept an openly gay or openly lesbian leading male, leading female
right.
in that role because that would destroy the fantasy. Now, is an audience today ready for that? I actually think that they are, but it's still a business. And now with the sort of global marketplace, there are many territories in the world where they won't even show Will and Grace, you know? So it's
a global marketplace.
It's still
yeah,
a business.
That's a big deal.
And we actually touch on that in the film, that not a lot has changed from the 50s to now in that respect.
That's so true, Jeffrey. And the rewards are so exorbitant today. My gosh. You know, so therefore, you know, if you happen to be in the public eye, whoa.
So much at stake. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know, Tab, do you think today, if you were still in the business, that you would be able to be the guy and break the taboo, or would it have to be the way it was then?
I wouldn't be in the business today. I mean, gosh, you know, I was a very lucky, very fortunate young man. I'll guarantee you, if I were a young man today, I wouldn't want to be an actor. I mean, except for the work, that's fabulous. But it's, you know, it's a toss of the dice. Luck plays a very important part in it all. I'm happiest around my horses. I probably would have been a horse trainer.
Oh, you would have been a horse trainer. That would
Without
have been,
a doubt.
I can see that. Let's talk about Henry Wilson. He was an agent who had He came up with the name Tab Hunter for you?
That's right. In fact, at one time he wanted to call me Troy Donahue, and I turned that down.
Somebody else became that.
I know. He said, we've got to tab you something, and I showed horses, hunters, right, and jumpers. So it was Tab Hunter as opposed to Tab Jumper.
So Henry Wilson had you. He had Rock Hudson. I think he also named Rock Hudson.
Oh, yeah, he did. He was very famous for giving different names, like Guy Madison, Rory Calhoun, you know, a lot of people.
I'm trying to figure out to what degree sexual politics played a role in any of this in that era. I mean, because Rock Hudson also, you know, was a guy in the closet.
There might be talk about a person, but it was all swept under the carpet. The studio never said a word to me about my sexuality because it was none of their business. And if they did know or thought something, they kept it to themselves. And I respected that. I really loved that. My job was to do my job. And if I didn't do it, I'd be out and someone else would be in.
But did they not ask you? Like at one point in the film, there's an example about how you would go out maybe with an actress. I think it was Natalie Wood, actually. And she would run off and go see Dennis Hopper and you would go your direction. But that appearance was public and important, right? That was for the papers.
You're absolutely right. It was building a career. The studio had a huge wing of PR. The publicity was there and they were pushing it all the time. So, you know, if I wanted to go out with Natalie and not be in a Hollywood environment, I would call her up and say, Nat, let's go out, let's do this, let's do that. But otherwise, if it were a premiere, and there was a premiere every week practically, I would go to the premieres, of course, with whoever I wanted to go with. And I would always go with the people that I loved. Once in a while, the studio would say, oh, we have a young gal here under contract. Would you take her? Or would you do this? Or would you do that? And I'd say, sure. But that's your job.
Well, so at one point, there was a story about you in Confidential magazine, which was given by your, I guess, then former agent. And how did that go down? How did that happen?
Well, I left Henry Wilson to go with Dick Clayton when Dick became an agent because he was the best. He was without a doubt one of the best.
And he had been important to getting you into acting in the first instance, right?
Oh, he was the one who I met at the barn. He was part of my family. Anyway, when Dick became an agent, I decided I didn't want to be with Henry any longer. You know, Henry would say, well, if Tab Hunter won't do, I have so-and-so, so-and-so, so-and-so for the role. Dick Clayton was very loyal to his clients, but they weren't just clients. They were friends. And that's what was important. So when I left Henry heard that Confidential was going to be doing a story on Rock, and he gave him that story on me being arrested when I was a kid.
The Confidential article. I mean, did that just evaporate? You seem to not have been as upended by that as I thought might have been the case.
Interesting you bring that up, because 2 weeks later, I was voted the most popular newcomer in the film industry. So, you know, people believe what they want to believe, and they just wouldn't buy that.
Well, we have to make a distinction between Confidential magazine and then the vast majority of the other movie magazines that were on the marketplace.
They were pushing the Tab as a hunk with a date on
exactly.
His arm, a girl date on his arm.
Exactly. And the, right. The studios and the fan magazines worked to create stars together. So Confidential was a fringe kind of magazine. It was very tacky.
It wasn't a movie magazine, that's for darn sure. I mean, Confidential was a rag, just like whatever these things are today and when you're checking out at the market, you know.
Yeah,
right.
It was
things.
The roots of the tabloid journalism you can find in the sleazy
right.
magazine. And so I think people probably either didn't know it or ignored it or just didn't take it seriously. And if you look at the actual article, it says Tab Hunter. It never comes out and outs him. It says Tab Hunter arrested in a limp-wristed pajama party.
That is quite a euphemism there.
Very cool. It sounds like a great party, actually, to me.
Coming up after a short break, Hunter and Schwartz tell us the creation of Tab Hunter Confidential came out of a mutual appreciation for John Waters' cross-dressing muse, Divine. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Make a donation of just a dollar a day and you can join one of our exciting and exclusive angel clubs. Choose from music, books, DVDs, or cookbooks delivered right to your front door. Learn more and join now at kcrw.com/join.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Our guests today are Jeffrey Schwartz, director of Tab Hunter Confidential, as well as Tab Hunter himself. One of the last actors under contract to a studio, Hunter ended up buying his way out of his deal at Warner Brothers in 1959 because the studio wasn't offering him the challenging roles he wanted. But without studio support, his career took a nosedive. He paid the bills by becoming a pioneer of dinner theater, where the stress of nightly performances led to a heart attack. Hunter's on-screen career had a revival with the John Waters film Polyester. Now, instead of playing the leading man opposite Hollywood starlets, his on-screen love interest was the larger-than-life drag queen, Divine.
Read my lips. I love you.
I love you, too, my darling.
Then let's make love, you sweet little thing.
Hunter's decision to work with Waters and Divine, against his agent's advice, eventually connected him and his partner, Alan Glazer, with Schwartz.
I always say all roads do lead back to John Waters. So for me, I actually heard of Tab through Polyester, where Tab acted opposite Divine.
Right.
And then, so I learned
Lost
about him.
Lost in the Dust, one of my favorite movie titles
ever. Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
That was the other movie that Tab did with Divine. But I made a documentary about Divine a couple of years ago called I Am Divine. And for that film, I met Tab and his partner, Alan, and interviewed them both about working with Divine on both Polyester and Lust in the Dust. And I had read Tab's book and just started thinking about what a fabulous documentary this would make.
And that's when Alan said, we want you, Jeffrey, to direct this. We would love for you to become part of the unit. And Alan and Jeffrey did a magnificent job.
This was just the stars all aligning at the exact right moment when we all decided this is the right time to do it. Tab was ready to do it. And I'm very attracted to stories about larger-than-life personalities and also sort of the private versus the public and the creation of a persona and all these themes that are – and of course
– embodied in Tab Hunter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, and it all came together just beautifully.
Well, so with – I know Tab is listening, Jeffrey, so just pretend he is not. Did you have to tiptoe at all?
I mean, I was never given any ground rules of what I can and can't talk to Tab about. And he had also – he'd already been through the trial by fire of writing the book and coming out and openly talking about things that he had been very private about for his entire life. And that must have been extremely difficult for him. So that was sort of a warm-up practice for the documentary. And so, no, there were no ground rules. I could talk to Tab about anything. You know, and there's a moment in the movie where I ask him about, you know, his first relationship with another man, and you can see him kind of squirming a little bit. So there was a lot of squirming. There was a lot of...
Yeah, this is not your natural speed to do this, Tab. I know. It's clear.
But I would tell you, Jeffrey is really creative. And what I love is he didn't just choose, we're going to go to and hit in one area, which is, to me, rather boring. He made it the journey. Mm-hmm. And I think the journey is what it is, and I respect Jeffrey for bringing that to the screen.
So there were, you know, and Tab, I think it was probably difficult for him. We were talking about some very painful episodes in Tab's life, his sort of early struggles with his sexuality and being rejected by his church that he loved very much, his mother's mental illness and having to institutionalize his mother, the death of his brother in Vietnam.
Yeah, you know, these are very hard.
Very painful things to revisit for anybody.
Sure.
But I feel that he was so generous with sharing all these things. There's so many people that grew up with Tab that love him but don't really know his story and don't know what's behind the image. And I've seen so many people when they fans of his who are of Tab's generation, they find out that Tab's gay, and the women will say, oh, I'm so disappointed. I never knew. I'm so disappointed. But then they see the movie and they learn so much and they love him even more.
Yes.
So it's very moving to
me. Just not in the same way.
Not in the same way. For older people, it's maybe getting to know a person. If they're a heterosexual audience, they're getting to know what it was like for gay people that they knew and were friends with but never were really able to share their lives with at that time. And for gay people, especially older gay people, there's a kinship there because they've been through the same struggles and that they've come out the other side too.
Right.
So, and for younger people, it's sort of like, wow, Tab has come out the other side of all of this pain and he has a wonderful life now and a happy life and he has love in his life.
Young people, I feel very sorry for today because everyone wants to go blah, blah, blah and let it all hang out. And I just think there are a lot of people that must be as frightened or more so than I was. And, I just think you have to accept it the way it is and let people work through it. And hopefully this can help someone who might have a problem in that direction because it was difficult. I just never confronted these things because I just figured it was nobody's business you know, now.
Yeah, I can sense just, there's a part of you that still feels like this is nobody's business, and you're sort of fighting against your own natural instinct to keep it very private. But at the same time, you know,
my life is my life. The important thing is, you know, growth. That's what's important.
Let me just turn to Jeffrey. We often ask documentarians on the show about licensing clips. You have a lot of clips from Tab's movies, and I don't know whether you found it difficult to get those or easier because Tab was on board, but...
I'm a big champion of fair use.
All right, fair
and,
use.
I've done it now. I kind of specialize in movies about popular culture,
right.
And I couldn't do the kinds of films that I like to do and enjoy to do without this fair use doctrine. So we did license a good amount of material for the film, but the studio film clips, we followed the rules in terms of fair use. We work with Donaldson and Califf, a very well-known law firm that actually Michael Donaldson is a champion of fair use and helped write the rules himself. So now that I've done it so many times, I know how to edit for fair use. So you just use just as much as you need to show your point and then move on. And so...
And Jeffrey's amazing in that direction, too. He's just amazing.
You're a fan.
Well, I think he's done a wonderful job. And I tell you, the marriage of Jeffrey and Alan was terrific because Alan collected all the movie magazines and playbills from the theaters and the baby pictures and all that stuff that I never collected anything.
Tab didn't keep anything from his career. When Tab and Alan met 30-plus years ago, Tab didn't have a scrap of memorabilia, no photos, no posters, no nothing. And Alan started recollecting all of that material, you know, at first in auction houses and thrift shops and then later eBay. And Tab
eBay.
Kept saying to Alan, what are you wasting your money on all that crap for? And Alan somehow knew that this was going to be important. He was sort of rebuilding Tab's his legacy in a sense. When we were ready to make the film, usually... when I start one of these things, you have to go on an archaeological dig and find all this stuff. But all I had to do was go to their backyard. And they have a trailer truck parked in the backyard.
Oh, my God.
Filled with memorabilia. Alan has a wall in the house of all the photos, every photo ever taken of Tab, every magazine cover, all in order of the year it was taken. I mean, it's really incredible.
Tab, you're living.
That's in the garage. It filed away. I wouldn't have it in the house.
I was going to say, are you living in the Tab Hunter Museum?
No, I don't think I'd like that at all.
So how has it been for you, Tab, to be in the subject of this movie?
Well, it's not my comfort zone, that's for sure.
But you're a good sport.
I'm thrilled that they've done such a wonderful documentary, and I'm really overwhelmed by the reception of it.
I don't know whether you wanted to do a movie or were you just being good to the person who's closest to you?
Well, no, I think the journey, everyone has a journey, and this was an interesting journey, no question. And if you can touch someone in some way, I think that's important. Geraldine Page said to me years ago, I said, Jerry, everyone loves you. You know, you can do no wrong. And the critics just crucify me. And she grabbed hold of my arm and she said, remember this, Tab. If people don't like you, that's their bad taste. And I thought, whoa, that's pretty powerful. I'm going to apply that to my life. And furthermore, I pass that on to all the young people I meet today. If people don't like you, that's their problem. You go on the road you have to go and be truthful to yourself.
Tab Hunter is the star and Jeffrey Schwarz is the director of Tab Hunter Confidential. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm a big fan.
Do what you want to do. I can't tell you who to sock it to. It's your thing.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.